You are the only one. So what are you carrying this morning? When you came in one of the million doors that comes into this building, what did you carry with you? What are you carrying today, or perhaps more significantly, what have you been carrying for a long, long time? What's weighing you down? What's in your backpack? What are the bricks? If you had to put a label on that brick, what are you carrying in your backpack, even as we speak at this very moment? I'm going to set it aside just for a moment. We'll come back to it. Joseph and his brothers, as their story is told in Genesis chapter 37 through Genesis chapter 50, Joseph and his brothers carried a lot of brokenness for many, many years. Jealousy and the subsequent anger that resulted from that jealousy changed the dynamics of their family forever. It was such a long-lasting change in their family because there was such jealousy and such anger. And for years, there was deceit that remained buried just under the surface. Joseph's brothers sold him as a slave into Egypt and came back and told their father that he had been killed, made up this fictitious story, and so therefore, deceit lingered under the story of that family for many, many years. And consequently, the family was separated and literally torn apart. And then after a period of years, long period of years at that, two unexpected events occur. Not only is Joseph released from an Egyptian prison, but he is elevated to being second in command in the country of Egypt. That was the first unexpected event. And the second one is during a time of widespread famine all over that part of the world. Who shows up? Who shows up literally out of the blue? Nothing other than his brothers show up. And so I'll reread just for review purposes and to bring up to speed those of you who were not here last Sunday. I'll reread that sequence of events that's recorded in Genesis chapter 45 as Joseph reveals himself to his brothers who show up in Egypt because it is such a time of severe famine and they're seeking assistance. In Genesis chapter 45, verse 5, and now this is what he says to his brothers, do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years, there'll be no plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. Genesis chapter 45, verses 5 through 8. Several things really stand out to me as I think about this interchange. As he reveals himself to his brothers and he conveys his love and concern for them, and also conveys that, you know, this really wasn't on you. God really had a far-reaching purpose for my life and for your lives, too. There's several things that really stand out. I want to mention three this morning. First of all, in this interchange, there is not even a hint of bitterness at all. Do you pick up on that at all? And what he conveys to his brothers, there's no hint of bitterness. And secondly, there is no indication at all that he is bearing a grudge against his brothers. No bitterness, not bearing a grudge, and thirdly, just an overall tone. there's an overall tone of forgiveness. He doesn't actually come out and tell his brothers, at least in this interchange, oh, I forgive you, but you pick up on it. The tone is there. There's most definitely a tone of forgiveness in the way that he communicates with his brothers. But yet a compelling question remains. Does this mean that reconciliation has occurred between Joseph and his brothers? Certainly there's a tone of forgiveness. Certainly he acknowledges God's purposes for his life, but does that equal to reconciliation? The fact that we've read just what we have in Genesis chapter 45. I mean, does it mean that Joseph and his brothers are gonna start watching football together on Sunday afternoon? I mean, does this mean they're gonna go fishing together? Does this mean that they're gonna have a normal Thanksgiving dinner where everybody gathers around the Thanksgiving table and puts their feet under the same table and everybody feels really warm toward each other and that you can have good and meaningful conversation? Does it mean all those things? Does it mean that there is true reconciliation? So what about reconciliation and what does that look like and how does it occur? So last week I used a phrase sweeping statement. Last week I made this statement. I said, I'm about to make a sweeping statement. I'm going to do the same thing again this morning. I'm going to make this sweeping statement, but I believe it's accurate. And the sweeping statement is, forgiveness precedes reconciliation. Isn't that true? You can't take what's broken and put it back together unless forgiveness has been extended. Therefore, forgiveness precedes reconciliation. And not only does it mean to bring things back together, reconciliation can also mean to set free or release. I have forgiven you. I'm going to set you free. I'm going to release the infractions that have been done against me. I have chosen to forgive, therefore things can now be put back together. And what was once broken is now a beautiful piece of workmanship once again. In your printed handout this morning, Jan has an excellent article regarding reconciliation. I want to quote directly from it. She says, when Joseph recognized God's hand at work in his life, he was finally able to do what seemed impossible, forgive his brothers. But he also realized that forgiveness was just the beginning. He would now have to take the next step of reconciliation in order for God to fulfill his plan of saving Joseph's family. Forgiveness addresses the hurt and the pain of the past. Isn't that true? Forgiveness addresses the hurt and pain of the past. But then when we go to that next level, reconciliation reestablishes the relationship for the future. What's broken is now reassembled and put back together and looks beautiful once again. So she goes on to say, for true reconciliation to occur, the distance between Joseph and his brothers, both physically and emotionally, could not continue as it was. Joseph demonstrated his willingness to close that gap with these words, you shall live in the land of Goshen and be near me, you and your children and your grandchildren. That's Genesis chapter 45, verse 10. He did not allow anything to remain as a barrier between them. So several years ago, I got to do some work with a consultant who at that time worked with churches that were conflicted. I know that comes as a great shock. Did you know churches can get conflicted? So he would come in as a consultant. He came in as an outsider, someone who was an expert in the field of conflict resolution. and come in as a consultant, work with these churches, and he often used a very technical phrase. Such a technical phrase, I think it'll expand your vocabulary, and it's going to expand mine as well. So you ready for a very technical phrase? I'm going to expand your vocabulary. In reference to the ideal of reconciliation, he would often ask, did it stick? That's the technical phrase. Did it stick? Doesn't that expand your vocabulary? Did it stick? In other words, we've told each other, I forgive you. Let's go on in life. I forgive you. Let's reconcile. We say all those things. It's all really good rhetoric. It sounds great. But as the days go on and as the weeks and the months go by, did it stick? Is it real? Are we really put back together? Have we reassembled ourselves? Have we really experienced reconciliation? It's a relevant question in reference to Joseph and his brothers. Did it stick? It's a relevant question because another very significant event in the life of their family, shall we say, causes his brothers to wonder. And that significant event is the death of their father, Jacob. They're wondering, is it going to stick? Our father is no longer around to kind of be looking over his shoulder. We are living in a patriarchal culture where the oldest living male has a lot of power, and he holds a lot of control. And so they can't help but wonder, will the reconciliation remain? Will it stick? Let's read Genesis chapter 50, last chapter in the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 50, verses 15 through 21, and we'll indeed determine whether it stuck or not. Verse 15. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "What if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him?" So they sent word to Joseph saying, "Your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you're saying to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. Now, please forgive the sins of your servants of the God your father." When their message came to him, Joseph wept. When he received that message, Joseph wept, broke down, overcome with emotion. In verse 18, his brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. "We are your slaves," they said. But Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children." And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. This is the climactic event in the story of Joseph's life. This very interchange is the climactic event in his life story. I've mentioned on just nearly every Sunday during the course of this series, focusing on Joseph's life, that threaded throughout the story in Genesis is the phrase, "The Lord was with Joseph, or he was with Joseph. In some form, that phrase is communicated. The Lord was with Joseph. At every juncture in his life that is described in the Genesis narrative, whether he's being sold as a slave, whether he is escaping the throes of Potiphar's wife, the Lord was with Joseph. It's a really an important theme in the story, and I find it especially encouraging that no matter how low that he got, no matter what difficult circumstances that he encountered, the Lord was with Joseph. I think it's time now for a little additional explanation that I really haven't delved into in previous weeks. The Lord was with Joseph in the sense that he was working on Joseph's heart on an ongoing basis. As these horrible events unfolded, the Lord was working on Joseph's heart. And so as we're introduced to Joseph in Genesis chapter 37, this favored 17-year-old who appeared to flaunt his favored status to his brother, showed up when his brothers are out there working, and he's wearing his multicolored coat, his long flowing robe. He shows up and it's almost, you can't help but think, you know, he's 17 years old. And he gets some little digs in on him. And so here's this 17-year-old who appeared to flaunt his favored status, has grown into a very godly man who has the ability to comprehend God's purpose for his life, who has the ability to extend mercy and forgiveness to those who had harmed him and treated him so badly. So as we consider this climactic interchange here in Genesis chapter 50, I firmly believe there are some hallmarks of reconciliation in this interchange, and I just want to note those very briefly this morning. Here's the first one. He expresses words of assurance to his brothers. As you just noted, he told them, "Don't be afraid," twice. They were terrified. And so in his very emotional state, he tells them twice, "Don't be afraid." These are clear words of reassurance. You want to talk about a hallmark of reconciliation. When a relationship has been broken, what do people need to hear? What needs to be conveyed in the most genuine, authentic way possible? Just some simple words of assurance. And in this case, the words of assurance were, "Don't be afraid." Secondly, there were some reassuring actions. His actions backed up his words. And what he said to them is, "I will provide for you and I will provide for your children." So his actions backed up his words, some very reassuring actions. That's a second hallmark of reconciliation. What are you going to do? Are you going to just talk? Or are you going to back up your talking with real actions? Thirdly, kindness prevails. The text even says he spoke kindly to them. And even when there has been forgiveness, sometimes it's tempting to hold things over somebody's head and to speak in an unkind way. Do you still feel bad? We speak in some kind of passive-aggressive sort of way. That's really tempting, but what's really neat is simply to speak kindly. It's a hallmark of reconciliation. And the final hallmark of reconciliation is that most definitely humility is evident. He recognized and even stated that it's God's place to judge evil and not his. I believe that really comes off as being truly humble. Humility is very evident in that he recognized that it is God's place to judge evil and not his. So once this interchange is over, he's finished this interchange with his brothers. And now that the interchange is over, Joseph and his brothers have been carrying a pretty heavy backpack. They can take one last brick out of the backpack. the weight of a broken family has now been taken away. Backpack feels pretty light now that the weight of a broken family has been taken away. As a result of his hallmarks of reconciliation, there are no lingering doubts. There is no reason to be afraid. The reconciliation is going to stick. This morning I would ask you, what about your family? How are relationships in your family? And I would even challenge you to think about the most difficult person in your family. You've heard me say this on several occasions. Every family has a Cousin Eddie. Think about Cousin Eddie. What's always concerned me, I've said this before too, I'm fairly certain I am Cousin Eddie in my family, so. What about other really important relationships in your life? How are your friendships, both long time and those that you've not known as well? How is the most difficult relationship other than family? Last week, the invitation was taken from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. And in that passage, Paul says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, along with every form of malice. So last week, as we thought about bitterness or the lack of it in Joseph's life, that was the challenge. I think invitations at the end of a sermon should appropriately be taken directly from Scripture and a passage that ties right back to the lesson. And the other thing I did last week, I gave you a little preview. I told you what today's invitation was going to be, if you'll recall. Today's invitation is taken from the very next verse in Ephesians 4, verse 32. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ, God forgave you. Here's how I'd like to couch that invitation this morning. Are you willing to take inventory of all of your important relationships, both family and friends alike? And in taking inventory, you simply ask yourself, where are you with each person? I've always made it a practice to never ask you to do anything I wouldn't do myself. So I did that inventory 2 weeks ago. It's quite a challenge. It's not necessarily easy to take inventory and ask, where am I with each person? And where's their brokenness? And where's their need for forgiveness? And where's their need for reconciliation? Are you willing to set the wheels of reconciliation in motion by committing to forgiveness? What brick remains in your backpack? Joseph and his brothers emptied a few. What this morning is keeping you from emptying yours? Let's sing an invitation song this morning.